This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people.
Welcome to Joe Plum's political soapbox on Vectis Radio.
Yes, we can.
Because Brexit means Brexit.
This, Mr. President, is a remarkable record.
The Isle of Wight Zoo is having difficulty importing a tiger.
My father gave me a small loan of $1 million.
Which we wouldn't have if we listened to the muttering idiot sitting opposite me.
Joining me on the show today is Julie Jones-Evans. Hello, welcome to Joe Plum's Political Soapbox. Today we're talking to Newport Central Councillor Julie Jones-Evans. Hello, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you, Joe, for inviting me.
It's good to, you are an independent councillor and have just been elected as part of the executive for regeneration. So I'm sure we'll be talking a bit about plans for regeneration on the island later on in the programme.
Yeah, I'd love to be excited to talk about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it has been an interesting few weeks in the council offices, with all in the chamber, with lots of different events happening and the big changes at the top. How have you found this since the Island Independence departure with Stubbings and Bacon, and then this new kind of Tory-led coalition?
Well, it was all a bit of a shock, to be honest. Just so near to the budget, obviously a massive budget we've got to do there for this, the coming financial year, and so near, you know, the elections as well in May. You know, almost got to the end of their sort of 4 years in tenure there, and yeah, so a bit of a shock really. However, I think this has kind of been bubbling for a while, I think, just sensing things. And obviously there's I've got my group of five we call individual members, you know, trying to differentiate ourselves between independence. It's a bit like the always think of Life of Brian with the people's front of Judea, people front, you know. It's hard to get some differentiation, so I'm like Julie from Newport. I try and sort of be like that really. So we were sort of prepared, you know, to step in. We already talked about it, you know, sort of as the months have gone on. And, you know, we sort of basically, yeah, there was an opportunity that we felt the independents were in disarray. And, you know, actually Steve Stubbings himself said we're in a mess. Didn't really feel that the island deserved that kind of administration leading, you know, given the actions they took, you know, as in resigning. So it just seemed to be, I think that's what I felt, that that's what the people of the island would want, some leadership and people just get on with the job and roll the sleeves up. And even if they were of different political persuasions, just actually put that to one side and just get on with it.
We had Chris Whitehouse in last week from the Conservatives, who was very clear on this as kind of just a caretaker, kind of sitting duck administration at the moment in the lead up. Is this how you kind of see this at the moment?
Well, we've got various constraints. I mean, you know, we've got elections on May the 4th, and then we've also, we can only do we enter the PERDA period, the pre-election period, at the end of March, so nothing really gets done at the council apart from, as in policy changes, that sort of thing. So it's only really like 2 months really to sort of make any kind of impact. And the budget has pretty much been set because they started work on that back in October, so there's not a lot of wiggle room to do anything kind of like to make your mark as such. It really is kind of just keeping things on a even keel. And, you know, the portfolio I've got, you know, looking at the regeneration, that's just, we've got new officers starting on Monday, it's really good. But with the education, children's services, adult social care, that absolutely has to have some leadership all the time, because they're two massive areas that, you know, it's people's lives are involved, so you couldn't leave that rudderless, I don't think.
And you've talked a bit about being an individual member, as you call it, very difficult to say. You were until January 2015 a councillor for the Conservative Party, and then you opted to leave the party.
Yeah.
How do you define kind of the being an individual member or being an independent? What does that mean to you?
If I might just go back a little bit into sort of why I decided not to renew my membership with the Conservatives. It wasn't that I sort of completely sort of changed my values or anything. Though I was always very much sort of the compassionate Conservative down sort of the left end of things, if you like. I mean, I joined when David Cameron was talking about the Big Society. So it was very sort of quite of attractive sort of idea to me about us working together and, you know, protecting our vulnerable and, you know, everyone's got something to offer and creating an environment where everyone can thrive. So that was very sort of kind of like, you know, sort of chimed with me. But being on the council for so many years, I just found that actually party politics got in the way, stopped me getting things done. I mean, I can give you one instance where I actually lost £80,000 of investment in Newport purely because I was an idea I put forward. They saw me as a Tory, and yeah, the people had the votes, you know, voting me out because of that. I voted, you know, so I couldn't get that one through. So I've really found that it's actually detrimental. It's actually not hurting me. They're actually hurting the people of Newport or the people I represent. So I'd much rather, you know, people saw me as Julie, who lives in Newport, grew up in Newport, got a shop in Newport, a family live in Newport, representing Newport. That to me just sounds, you know, proper. I mean, I've had some criticism about working alongside UKIP with this new sort of arrangement at County Hall, but I don't really see, I see Daryl as Daryl from Wootton, who the people voted in, and he's working for his community mainly. And, you know, I've talked to him about various homeless initiatives that I've sort of had my eye on anyway, and he's quite open to them. And it's all about, you know, you talk to someone on a you know, face to face with no barriers there, you actually got more in common than you think. People see barriers all the time, and I just want to get rid of them.
On that issue of homelessness, something I wanted to talk about today is there are obviously some concerns of people who are thinking, you know, who've got in charge of planning and covering all those areas, is UKIP, whose fundamental kind of policies as a party nationally are against the kind of things that some people would like to support, and things like the Syrian refugees coming over. But there are people who have genuine concerns about that and their role in the council at the moment. Yeah. What do you feel about that?
I think, again, it's people see what happens on a national stage. And, you know, I did some training about a year ago with the LGA and in the independent group. Now, in the independent group on the local government organisation, association, you have Greens, you have UKIP, and you have Independents. Now, so I was on a course, and there was some UKIP councillors. I was going, well, how can you translate what you do nationally to your local area? And actually, so that's all we do is our local stuff. They don't really, though, they have got that differentiation, but it does muddle things, which is again why I'd rather much take party politics out of local councils. I don't really think it really has a much of a place at all. I think it's just blockage all the time. But people maybe who don't kind of look into what's happening in their community and might just see, oh yeah, I always vote Labour, so there I've got to put my cross there, and maybe I don't go any further than actually thinking about what's happening. But no, I mean, you know, Daryl Pitcher's got the planning and the homelessness brief and housing, but don't forget we working as a team, so he's got everyone around him, you know, helping and advising as well where he needs it. So I've already given him some stuff on some homelessness. The day he got the job, I was like, Daryl, have a look at this.
There was an interesting thing that came through Brighton Council this week about it being passed that any council building that's unused can be used now as a homeless shelter. And lots of people pushing forward. You've got places like Brighton who are doing that, and you've also got places like Southampton where homeless people are being fined for staying on the street. So it's a difficult battle. Like, obviously, lots of people have different views on it. What's your personal view of what we could do to help support homeless people on the island? Obviously, the bus shelter has come in and has had quite a big impact on homelessness on the islands, but it's still happening, and there's still people getting into situations where they need help and support.
Very much so, yeah. So I went on to, I think it was Basingstoke's council and website, and they got this initiative where they're actually doing some outreach with mental health workers, because quite often people have ended up in that situation because, you know, they can't cope with the situation and their mental health might not be, you know, as good as it should be. And so you sort of end up in a spiral situation. So that seems to be quite a good project that they've sort of copied from London. And I sent to Daryl. But also on their website, there was lots of information about basically how to prevent it, and where you could go for help. So I you know, charitable organisations as well, voluntary groups and so on, and where sort of shelters were. It was actually quite a good website. Went onto our Isle of Wight Council website, and it actually wasn't that informative. So maybe people that might, you know, might go and look online, might know for homelessness and what's going to happen. But it's that information gathering that's really important. But it's got to start you can do interventions right when people are homeless, but it's about starting before there, isn't it? It's really, it's about getting people's mental health and their self-esteem up, which I know is a big ask and probably something that I can't do on my own, but I think we need to be thinking that, you know, bolstering up our children, our teenagers. You know, our teenagers are such a difficult time for anyone when they're going through different changes. Yet, you know, my friend's son is 14. He's suffering from anxiety. Yet the mental health team say, "Oh, we can't. That's not a mental health issue. We can't help with anxiety." Yet that's leading to other risky behaviours.
Mm.
So it's about catching it early. And I know the CAMS team on the island didn't do very well in the recent news inspection. So we'll see what the actual results when they release the report. But I think that's one thing we need to really major on.
In terms of there's been a lot of talk nationally about people, MPs who are working for their constituency, and then whether they've got the national interests at heart. Do you find the similar situation to kind of, you've got your ward of Newport, but also thinking about the island as a whole, and that kind of balancing act between the two? How have you found that? Is it something that is quite a challenge, or something you've
I guess where I've got the heart of the county town as my ward, I deal with businesses a lot as well, so not necessarily my residents, but I have to deal with the issues they've got. So you can actually almost say I've got like a double amount of work, but that does lead you to sort of net think sort of more sort of globally, because people do come into Newport, so you are sort of affecting the whole island being the county town. But yeah, I mean, I do have some ward issues that would love to sort of wave a magic wand and get them sorted, but I've got to be thinking about the wider issues, like the Newport traffic model, for instance, which is a massive thing that's going to happen for Newport next year, hopefully, if we get the funding for it. But that's going to affect, you know, that's, we're going to get some, hopefully get some funding from the LEP for that. We're going to put some funding towards it as well. But that's going to mean people from Cowes will be affected by it, and come from Sandown and Ryde, also the whole island. So I'm quite lucky in a way that it is sort of the conduit of the island, you know, for the people coming across the island. So, but yeah, sometimes you have to think about the island as a whole, and it's just a balancing act. But you get. I think the longer you do it, you sort of get used to being able to manage it.
And in Newport in particular, when you walk down the high street, the number of closed shops, the number of charity shops that are up there. Mm-hmm. We've had obviously BHS leaving, Thornton's closing, mm-hmm. a number of big names leaving the high street. It kind of gives a negative picture of what it's like. And I mean, if you compare Newport to Ryde, say, which may have, you know, still has some closed shops and still has some charity shops there, but there are a lot more independent shops in Ryde than there are in Newport, and they kind of seem to be cropping up and being able to sustain, whereas these big national chains are the ones that tend to be disappearing off our high streets as well. So how have you found that, and what kind of things have you been doing to help support the high street itself?
Well, I've got another hat I wear, which is the chairman of the Federation of Small Businesses on the island. So I'm all for small business. I've got my shop, I've got our family business up Node Hill, Dragonfly. We've been there since 1979, and before that my granddad had his shop across the road as a bakery, so my mum and her nine brothers and sisters sort of grew up there. So small businesses sort of run through my veins, really. And when people, visitors come to Newport, and they come up our street, we don't have any chains. I think we've got the Warhammer shop now. I think we've got so that's probably the only sort of chain, I guess, store we've got up there, and Oxfam. But people love the independent stores, they really do. It gives that character, because you've got these big names just make it sort of soulless, don't they? Anyway, you could be anywhere in the country, to be honest. So it was 2012, with Steve Smith, who actually is McDonald's manager, which you might think, well, it's a big chain, but actually they're at the time they're owned by just the two restaurants were owned by one person, because it's like a franchise. And he's very, you know, they're very, very interested. So we set up Newport Business Association, which had been like, hadn't sort of run for several years, and that's independent businesses. We did try and bring in the big businesses to like Marks and Spencers and Next, but they're not really interested. They don't really have that authority to say we're going to enter a little local competition we're going to run or do a window dressing comp. They don't kind of, they're not allowed to do that, so they can't actually join in part of their community. So we've been working now, so I guess it'd be 5 years that we set that up, and we've done a few initiatives in town and competitions and just getting footfall going and joining in with the parish council with events as well. So just to try and keep our place, you know, in people's minds, draw people to Newport. I've also got a map I'm doing at the moment, which is going to be allowing businesses to advertise down the back street, so down Lugley Street and Watch Bell Lane and Holyrood, mm-hmm. all around that area, because it's actually really interesting once you start walking around Newport and going down these little offshoots. I think they're saying in The Guardian this week, wasn't it, about Newport? Yeah,
the quaint little streets.
That's right, yeah. So that's a great, I mean, I should be putting that in a t-shirt, I think, you know. That'd be great. So yeah, we have to balance, because people do want to come for the big names as well, so it's all about balance really. But it's not nice seeing our high street empty, and that's kind of conversation I had this week about the regeneration was, you know, we can't just be thinking about doing Newport Harbour up or, you know, the Rhine Esplanade. We've got to be thinking about doing the little things as well to support our high street. So even just things like a declutter is always good.
And these units that are empty, like BHS, they're enormous buildings and obviously cost a lot in terms of having to pay business rates and all sorts of things for people to take over. So, and I think that's the difficulty with Newport, is you've got the shops that are empty are very large shops, aren't they? And it's difficult for an independent business to set up and to start in there. So what kind of what would you like Newport High Street to be looking like in the next few years?
I'd like it to be free of cars to start off with. A little more places to sit and rest and have some shade, maybe bring some vegetation back, and just have it bustling with people. You know, I'm really sort of getting more and more aware and more keen on creating an environment, especially for our older generation, because I was listening to David Willetts. I did a Radio 4 programme a couple of weeks ago about demographics, and he was saying, so my son's generation, he's 14, so many more of them are going to be living to 100, but what kind of life are they going to have between 80 and 100? Is it going to be frailty? Are they going to be, you know, at home, isolated, or are they going to be a bit more fit? You know, we just don't know, but we need to create an environment. And if you've got, you know, a pedestrianised area, place to sit and people just mingle and talk to each other and, you know, be sociable again, and not be divided up by cars all the time, then I think that is an environment that everyone can thrive in. But we need to really be thinking about our ageing population. We can't ignore it, you know.
Okay, we're going to talk a little bit more about our regeneration just after this break, and we'll come on also to talk about your plans for the 20-mile-an-hour limits across the island. So, cue.
Putting the community back into local radio. This is Vectis Radio. VectisRadio.com. For the people, by the people.
Hello, you're listening to the Political Soapbox on Vectis Radio. My guest this week is Julie Jones Evans, who is the individual member for Central Newport on the Isle of Wight Council. So we talked a little bit during the break about 20 mile an hour limits. Can you just explain to our listeners kind of what the plans are and what your ideas are about that?
Okay, well, most people, first thing they say about 20 mile per hour, they go, cars don't go more than 20 miles per hour, Julie, what are you on about? But it's all about that balance between cars and people. I just think cars have overtaken, and rather than, you know, the streets that we want to sort of play in and walk across and communicate with each other, they're just being sort of dominated. They sort of divide us now, where they're really supposed to link us together. So it's that sort of fundamental principle, really. And I've been following this agenda for, you know, several years now, since 2012, actually, when I did a survey of my ward, and the response I got back, everyone was in favour of it, because you just get so many more public health benefits from it. You know, you actually can get less cars in a 20 mile per hour zone, because it can free things up, because people think, oh, actually I can, it's more safe to walk or cycle. So people do tend to do that, and we're waiting for a big Atkins report to come back on the impact of on 20 mile per hour. But it was really just about, you know, trying to sort of get our spaces back, really. I've got a lot of elderly and people living in Newport Central, and some of them feel quite isolated, you know, live in the middle of town and they don't have to have a car because their services and shops are right on their doorstep, yet they find it even hard to get out of the house and cross the road. road because of the volume of cars. So it's not the total answer, 20 miles per hour, but so it does give these sort of health benefits, and they've seen it all around the country how it's improved things. I mean, Bristol's done some great work on this, and London is getting more and more 20 zones as well. So, you know, you think back, that 30 mile per hour limit was set back in like 1934, I think, and you know, the motor vehicle has advanced slightly since then. They're bigger, heavier, and there's the basic thing about, you know, you get hit at 30, you probably won't survive, but hit at 20, you've actually got a much better chance of survival. So there is that aspect to it as well. And the Isle of Wight doesn't have a record to shout about the seriously injured and killed on our roads as well. So there's that aspect to it as well. But it's more about the public health, about sort of getting our streets back a bit. And that in turn can actually lead to communities, you know, communicating a bit better, loss of isolation, local shops doing better because people are actually out and they can go and walk rather than having to like order online or go to drive to a supermarket. So again, that takes out these journeys. And I think the biggest thing for Newport, it's got so many schools in Newport and also a high school, sorry, secondary schools now. And you know, imagine that, wouldn't that be better if kids could walk and cycle? But at the minute, you know, me as a parent, I drive from one side of Newport to the other side to take my son to Wellington Road at his secondary school, and he walks home, but I would much rather him cycle, but it's so busy in the morning. I'm like, actually, there's not a safe route for you to go, Harry, so I'm going to just take you and you can walk home at leisure, you know, because there's people going to work and there's people driving. It's just like, it's just hectic, isn't it? But I do drop him a few streets away, so he walks that distance. But it's just so you imagine that morning, if we could replace half the cars with people cycling and walking, that would just transform our spaces, wouldn't it? It's healthier.
Yeah, my friend always used to joke that it was Isle of Wight law that you have to go through Coppins Bridge at least once every day.
yes,
but it's a difficult thing because the way that the island's road system works is that most to cross from one part of the island to the other, you have to go through Coppins Bridge and you have to go through Newport, which brings a lot of traffic and causes a lot of problems and gridlock and things during the weekend and things like that.
Yes.
So is it something that can be dealt with just looking at kind of 20 mile an hour zones, or does it the kind of bigger picture of how the road structures work on the island need to be?
I mean, so I talked about the Newport traffic model earlier, and that is going to be a big part of getting some cars out of the town centre, using encouragement to use the Forest Road, and the junction at the top of St Mary's roundabout is going to be improved, and also the junction down the bottom by Lidl, because that gets a bit sort of snarled up down there, doesn't it? So there's two major improvements there too, as well as the one I spoke to you about in the break down the bottom of County Hall, that arm of Coppins Bridge being shut off. That would be essentially a pedestrianised area down there. So these plans were done back in 2010, so I'd double check on that particular aspect of it, but it does go hand in hand. But even just, you know, down Caesars Road, I mean, if you've got, you know, parking either side, but you wouldn't believe that the impact it makes of cars driving even at 30 down there, whiz 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 whiz, nice straight road. And people who live in Caesars Road, some they can't even sleep sometimes because, you know, just so loud, and it's all built up, and you know, the sound doesn't go anywhere. And I think just want to alert people, okay, 20 means there's people. Just think, okay, there's people living here, going to school here, working here, shopping here. We need to just think, rather than, I think when you're in your car, you know, I love my car, but, you know, I'd rather walk and cycle more if I could. If it was, you know, made more safe, really. I think when people don't feel that safe, I think it's that perception of danger that we need to, that this 20 sort of helps bring down. And you can do things with your streets a bit more. You can do, you can sort of have sort of build outs and do little gardens, and there's a lot more you can do when you've got a 20 zone. There's legislation completely changes where we're quite limited. I've got a big issue down Mill Street, which I could bore you with if you wanted to. It's not boring for me, but it's quite involved. The people down Mill Street have, since that Link Road has opened up to Fox's Road for Sainsbury's, it's just become a nightmare for them. And I've got there's three residential sort of homes for retired people within like meters of each other, so they're finding it particularly difficult. Got people, you know, mobility scooters, you know, walking frames, and they just can't even cross the road. So I'm working on that. I'm meant to find a resolution there, and so 20 would be amazing there.
Okay. In the new executive, your role is for regeneration. So, what can you tell us about the current plans? And I know, obviously, this is kind of a temporary post for now until the May elections. But what things are in the pipeline, and what would you like to see regeneration be doing?
Well, I was really happy to see that Newport Harbour was kind of top of the list that they announced back in November, and you might do if you saw the county press a few weeks ago with the
shard.
Yeah, the shard. Yeah, it's good to be controversial, isn't it? Just to get a bit of press. But no, take that away. The plans that were put forward, that particular gentleman, I thought were quite inspiring, really, and something we need to have in Newport. So the fact that I'm not saying that's going to happen, his particular plan, I'm sure the other people got ideas as well, but the fact that has been sort of earmarked as a regeneration site, I think is, well, it's just so long overdue. It would also mean that we can invest in the harbour walls, get the dredging done, and at the moment I don't know if you know much about the harbour, but it's got a harbour estate, which the council owns most of the harbour, and we also own the riverbed as well, which is unusual. So we own the whole of the harbour. There's a law around the harbour that you can't have a lease for more than 3 years. So that means that people really don't want to be investing millions of pounds if they can only have a piece of land for 3 years. So doing a harbour revision order at the moment, which means then we can have longer leases. It also means the council can dispose of land more easily and offer long leases, like, for instance, with the Premier Inn, that's got a very long lease, 100 years, I think, and they got that for £1 to do some infrastructure, about £500,000 of infrastructure around the area. So that sort of thing, that shouldn't have happened, actually. That was actually what they call ultra vires. That shouldn't have happened. That was against the law. Against this clause, if you like. So what campaigners in Newport around the harbour and I'm concerned about is, because the council haven't sort of been so sort of thoughtful in the past about the harbour, if they get the harbour revision order through without a plan and vision for how it's going to be developed, it's a possibility that it could be sold off piecemeal, so bits of land, and then we could lose that opportunity. So that's why I'm quite keen that there's a plan before the harbour revision order goes through.
There's been a lot of talk about regeneration in the kind of Sandown, Shankland Bay area as well.
Yes.
We had Richard Priest on a few weeks ago. He was talking about a kind of things that he'd like to see the money being spent on over there, and kind of infrastructure projects, but also getting more support for the community and as a whole, as well as these things. What kind of things have you?
Well, I was just talking to the assistant director who's just started now. She's a lady called Rhaenyra O'Donnell, and she's actually been on the island for 18 months. She chose to, for a lifestyle change for her and her family, to move down here. Previously, she worked in local government in Kingston. And I had my first meeting with her. She only started. She actually started the day that the resignations came through. So she was like, okay, is it always like this down here? I said, no, it's not at all. It's just like, it's a one-off. And she was saying about getting a fund up to get the, maybe some hotels can do some match funding just to spruce up the map. But those the hotel fronts, I think that sort of thing's actually quite important. Fresh liquor paint, nice clean up area, nice planting. I think that all kind of like gives you, so I put your best foot forward, isn't it, really? It's like, as we say in the theatre, tits and teeth. Yeah. Isn't it, so that's something that could be quite fairly sort of easy to deliver and quick to deliver. That's just one thing. I mean, I'm sure that the local members have got some other ideas how they'd like it, but I did have a business one summer in Sandown High Street, so I know that they do get a lot of people there. You can get a lot of people there, but just needs that faded grandeur. Not so faded, doesn't it? I think, because that's part of it. But community's got a massive part to play. Things can't be done to people. It's got to be about what they want.
I'm just looking at the. I've got the photos of the new executive.
Okay.
On the white here.
Yeah.
And you are the only female representative on the executive.
You noticed, yeah.
And it's something that obviously people are interested in becoming or standing for their ward at the moment. Lots of talk about people coming up and standing as independent candidates or as part of a party. Do you think the council does is an attractive place for if you are a woman and want to get involved in politics and local politics. Do you think it is accepting, or do you think it is still quite male dominated and a male environment? The videos we've seen last week of some of the behaviour in the council and these big changes that tend to happen have put people off. We've also had reports this week from female MPs and the number of people who've received abuse in that role is shocking. Those kind of roles. Do you think it puts women off getting involved in politics?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I just about 10 months ago, I set up a Facebook group and started a campaign alongside like a Fix Lothian. I spoke to Fix about it, about just getting more women just to stand, put themselves out. So it's going to be, you know, without politics, you know, all cross party, if you want to put it like that, but really just get women to stand, because, you know, it's 5 women out of 40 on the Isle of Wight Council. So it's a bit on parish councils. In fact, Newport Parish Council, it was 7-7, which was just perfect. You know, did that really right. But the whole that combative, environment, it's really, really does put people off. I mean, I've had particular councillors who may have been on film recently, really attacking me in public, and it's really not very nice, you know. It really shakes you, and especially when people don't know what people's background is. You know, I don't know much about you, but I wouldn't start abusing you. I could take you back back somewhere in your mind. Like, I mean, I've been through things in my past, and it sort of takes you back, and you're like in shock, and it's really, you shouldn't be that. I'm actually come here just to do my job and represent my residents, or talk about a particular island issue, and it should be put aside. And that's why I'm thinking, is that to do with politics as such? Is that because, you know, he saw me as a Tory? And when he wasn't a Tory, and was that it, or was he at, or is he actually a misogynist? I don't know. But there's it's a very difficult place to work, but with more women there, it will become easier.
It seems kind of, this is almost like a worldwide issue at the moment, with comments that Trump's been making, that kind of whole opinion, just the, and especially things we've seen locally as well in the last few weeks, that is kind of, it feels like angry politics is out everywhere. It's just like, we're going to do this, this is what's happening, this is
Well, maybe it's the rise of the woman that men are feeling scared somehow, and they're like, we're fighting back.
Yeah, it was very good. I read Grayson Perry's new book about gender.
Oh,
and
really?
He says that there's some difficulty, because to achieve equality, you can go up and some people have got to come down to get to that point. You're never going to go down further than they're coming up, because that won't be equality. But it's that kind of how the kind of white straight male is finding this kind of rise and dominance from the different.
I mean, I've had things like when I very first started, being in a meeting, only woman there again, and it was like a meeting of just councillors, and can someone take the notes? Oh, Julie, here you go. Why, you look like a secretary. But then I do the nurturing stuff. I will go and take the group in, chocolate and or ice creams, or make them cups of tea as well. But that's kind of like just group working. That just makes people feel a bit more included, doesn't it? You know, you need that soft stuff too.
With things in terms of kind of attitudes and behaviours within the council, do you think there should be more things in place of like the kind of, this is how we expect councillors to behave, and more kind of, not punishment, but kind of action done if people aren't behaving or aren't following that kind of thing, because you are representing the people of your ward and your area.
Yeah, I mean, I had a period, sort of incident last summer where I was abused and verbally abused, and actually was getting quite sort of threatening by someone who was, you know, should have known better, another member. This is in front of the chief executive, in front of another group leader, and it was quite scary, actually. And this guy had to step in front of us, and that was just literally about asking if he sent me an email or not. So I don't know what had happened that day. But I did put a complaint in about it, because I was really shaken up and just like, this is unacceptable. But we don't have the standards board got disbanded. I think it was about that might have been the Conservatives came in 2009. I think it was a thing that got taken out. And so you used to have this recourse where, you know, there would be a sort of investigation and there could be, you know, you could have a suspension or whatever. But that doesn't happen anymore. So it's up to each councillor to stick by the code of conduct that they signed up to. But sometimes people aren't able to sort of resist a moment like that, or maybe forget about the code of conduct. I don't know. But I always think, yeah, actually, it's a person chooses how to behave, really. You can sort of check yourself and think, is this appropriate, really?
Because I suppose when you're in there, you've got all the other members of the council have all been elected by their own wards, have the same right to be in the chamber as anyone else.
Exactly.
But it must be difficult when you stand as an individual candidate, when you're kind of fighting for your personal views about what should happen, and they're obviously taking on board the views of other people, but you're standing because of your personal views, whereas other people are standing on behalf of a party and can kind of hide some of those things over that party politics and kind of separate their personal and the party a little bit more. Do you find that? Is it quite
sometimes people put motions forward in the chamber that are actually about party politics and try and sort of dress it up in a council related debate? But I think I've only put in motions, like I've had two actually recently. I had the 20 mile per hour in October and I had the residence parking 2 weeks ago, both of which were relevant to the whole of the island because we actually passed the 20 mile per hour that to be introduced, asked executive to get it introduced in all places on the island, residential areas and where people work, shop, that sort of thing. So I've sort of strayed away from that, but people do because let's face it, you've got people, they've got the press there, haven't you? You've got a gallery full of people, usually. So it's an opportunity for some people to have their voices heard and, you know, show off a bit, really.
Yeah, it becomes a bit more of a performance.
It does.
Deals with kind of Portsmouth and Southampton has been coming out this week with the plans that were going ahead there, and it's been very clear under the new executive that they are not interested in Portsmouth and Southampton and want to focus on relationships and building relationships with Hampshire and on our own. What are your thoughts on those companies?
Well, I was always a bit dubious of the deal that was sort of being put forward, because initially, you know, going back when the devolution was first talked about, Hampshire were going to be involved and that felt sort of more of a natural place for us to be. But I think because the mayor issue became a big thing, I know even locally, like on the island, we're not actually that keen on a mayor. And, you know, if we were part of Southampton Portsmouth, just the numbers alone, we'd never get an Isle of Wight mayor. So it was really, what actually have we got that much? What have we got in common with Portsmouth and Southampton? What would our joint aims be? Because we're still distant from them, but actually we're near them sort of geographically, but are we near them in our sort of way, the way we are on our industries and the way we love our lives? We're actually more probably akin to Hampshire with a more rural kind of, they understand the rural economy as well, where those are two major cities and major ports, aren't they? So, you know, and the other thing that people probably weren't aware of, that the deal, the way the legislation read, because don't forget, we only were only ever looking at the governance, how it was going to be managed. It wasn't actually about the money, wasn't even mentioned actually. All they got that 30 million from was because that's what other similar deals had got given, so there wasn't even promised that. But other councils, like district councils, could apply to come in, so that money would actually get sort of watered down, so you'd have all the Hampshire, like New Forest and district councils could have joined. And we got a letter the day before the devolution deal, the vote on devolution. I think there's about 9 district councils that are already wanting to come in, which was okay, you know, you want to work together, but actually, hang on, we're signing up for something that's pretty major here, yet it's really unclear what we're signing up for. A mayor would have the ultimate say on the budget as well, so where would the island be left, really?
Yeah, lots of tough decisions about that. And I know that kind of began the big divide between the main chamber and the then executive under Stubbings and Bacon, because obviously they overruled what
That's
happened
right.
there. So kind of from then on, you start to see more of the division between what was going on, I think. It's quite clear.
Yes.
Right, it's time to go on to Prime Minister's questions now, which is our 20 quick-fire questions about your opinions, because obviously we've only got an hour, so there's only certain things we can talk about.
Yeah, that's gone quickly.
Good to hear about lots of different things. So, number one is, are you for or against a fixed link?
I would like a train, an underground, I'd like a tunnel train. I think that'd be great, but I wouldn't want a bridge with lots of cars coming over, no.
Should we allow fracking on the Isle of Wight?
No.
What is the biggest problem facing the island today?
I think maybe we aren't not confident enough. I think we're sort of talking to ourselves down a bit, and I think we need to look at our assets and what we've actually got and make the most of our communities and our voluntary groups and our elected members to think a bit more differently. You know, I think we've been a bit depressed, to be honest. So, yeah, I think it's an attitude, maybe.
Are you a saver or a spender?
Well, a bit of both, actually. Yeah, I've got my piggy bank, but then, you know, I will go and splurge out every now and again as well, yeah.
What's the best thing about UK politics?
UK politics?
Yeah.
I think people are happy to engage in talking, and there's lots of opportunities to engage. But I don't think, I mean, just talking about my ward of Newport, we've only got like a 26% turnout in local elections, which is not great, is it really? So I want to get more people engaged, because they don't realise that everyone's, you know, one man, one vote. That's actually quite powerful. You have actually got a voice.
Yeah.
But people think, actually, I can't change anything. But hey, one man changed the world. Look at Donald Trump. Hey?
Yeah. One word to describe Brexit.
Ooh, shame.
And what's the worst thing about politics in the UK?
The combativeness, yeah.
What newspaper do you read?
I don't actually. Counter Press, yeah.
Should we fine parents who take their children out of school for a holiday?
No.
When did you first vote?
When I was 18.
Should the voting age be lowered?
Yes. Yeah.
Are you proud of your country?
Yes.
And what is the best thing about living on the Isle of Wight?
Oh, because it's just like my family. It's just like a lovely, nice place to be. We've got our beaches, it's such a beautiful place, and it just feels like, I don't know, we just all communicate with each other a bit more, you know, just that community thing. That's what I like.
What's the worst thing about living on the Isle of Wight?
Well, I can't just pop up and see my friends on the mainland on a whim. You know, it's got to be planned, hasn't it?
One word to describe Donald Trump?
Disaster.
Who would win in an arm wrestle between you or Jeremy Corbyn?
Oh, I would, easy, yeah.
Who will win the next general election?
Next general election? Liberal Democrats.
Is Britain full up?
No.
Should Scotland become an independent country?
No.
And what would your first policy be if you became Prime Minister?
Oh, my first policy. I haven't really thought about that. Well, I would make the 30 default limit into a 20 default limit. There we go, for the whole country.
Okay. And very good at quickfire questions, which is a contrast to many of the people we have on here, where it takes 10 minutes to answer.
Probably get in trouble for some of them, but no, hey.
So we've got the elections coming up on May the 4th, and obviously lots of things leading up. Are you hoping to stand in the next election?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I've got a few things that I want to, you know, finish off, some projects I want to see through, and you know, I'd absolutely love to be able to continue on the my new job. I've only had for a week, but hey, you know. So, I'd love the opportunity to continue that, and I think Dave Stewart and in his leadership has shown that he's prepared to, you know, work across the divide.
Is that something you'd like to see in the next, to kind of this sort of coalition and representation in the executive?
So. I think so. I think that's what the people of the island expect, don't they? Don't they think that actually the people that are doing these important jobs should be the best people to do them? You know, regardless of their political affiliations, because.
Yeah.
And it's almost going back to the committee system, which the independents were going to bring in, isn't it? I think you do have that. I think it's healthier I mean, I know I've done, say, some LGA training. You meet councillors, might be from London boroughs, who have always been Labour and always will be. They have difficulties. They don't have any other kind of different views. They find it just actually gets a bit boring and it gets a bit stale, and then they end up fighting with each other.
Yeah.
So I just think we have got, I mean, people have got some talent on the island, and we've got, I mean, like Richard Priest is really great. He's always followed his brief on the adult social care, and John Gilby, again, really hot on the PFI, and he's got a good relationship with Island Road. So that's something to nurture, and I think that'd be beneficial. I think a lot of that is about relationships, actually, and obviously being previously a member of the Conservative group, of course, you know, I've got some very good relationships with my fellow council, especially my Newport group. You know, got Matthew Price and John Hobart, and you know, we work very, very closely together, and Chris Whitehouse as well. So you just got to see, oh, they're from, they represent that ward, or they've got those particular talents, and let's nurture them, and let's, you know, make them maximise them, really.
And what advice would you have if somebody's listening, they were thinking of standing in the election in May?
Yeah, if you've got the feeling, go for it. You know, absolutely, why not? I mean, I'm meeting a few people I have met in the past as well, just to give them some sort of, you know, personal advice. But no, do it. I mean, I did. I came into it by accident when the council closed off Chapel Street, and I sort of just started campaigning, and this is sort of the route it led me to. But no, if you've got a feeling to do it, then do it. It depends what your motivations are, really. But there's plenty of support there, and I always talk to people, and we've got our Facebook group, a council of women, so any girls are welcome to join that. Oh, we do have boys on there as well, but we're not sexist like that. But really, we do want to get more women on, you know, we are half the population after all.
Yeah, that'd be good to see.
Yeah.
Next week on the show, we have some representatives from the Isle of Wight groups out of Amnesty and International, which will be really interesting to talk about. Torture and their support of people who are in prison in internationally, especially with comments that have come out this week from Trump. And we've seen this was asked yesterday when Trump met Theresa May, and by the BBC correspondent said, you know, what's, are we going to be supporting Trump when he's saying that he wants to bring back waterboarding and things like that?
Yeah.
It's quite those kind of big issues, and it's a difficult balance at the moment, isn't it? Because obviously Theresa May wants to go out and have a you know, build up trade deals and be ready for
risk,
leaving.
Wasn't it actually for her?
And at the same time, morally, a lot of the things we've seen Trump sign away in the executive orders this week have kind of gone right against our
country's
corporate.
It's like we deal with China,
beliefs.
Don't we? And then you look what they're doing, what they've done to Tibet. You know, that's another thing that we sort of forget about, don't we? What happened in that country?
Yeah, I think it's one of those, especially with the Brexit deals across. As we start to have those negotiations and trying to look outside of Europe, that actually these countries that we do need trade deals and we do need to work with them, but.
Yeah.
You know, where's the red line with that, and where's our...
I mean, as far as, you know, Europe goes, I was actually going to vote out for quite some time until about a couple of weeks before, and I was just sort of started to think about it a bit more deeply. And, you know, I think the open borders, it can be an issue, because, you know, I do prefer like an Australian-style type of immigration policy. I think that would be good. But, you know, we need to be thinking about working with our neighbours. You know, I think by being isolationist, it could be a danger that I don't think that's good. Like, America's going down that road now, and that could be, I don't think that's really healthy. You know, we do work globally now. You know, I can, you know, pick up my phone and I could be, you know, doing a Skype call to someone, you know, across the world. You know, we're so connected now. I don't think it's healthy about bringing us back. But, you know, I don't, also all the legislation that's come out of Europe, I think that does stifle business too. So I would like to see a lot of that go. So I would prefer to have seen a different negotiation for us to stay as partners, but you know, the people have spoken and that's what's happening, so I just hope that they get it right. It's a massive piece of work they're doing, and I'm not sure by forcing things through we could end up with some banana skins further down the road. So I'd like to have been a bit more measured, really, and them coming to the people with a proper proposal, thought out, actually Plan B, because I don't think Cameron thought people were going to vote
No.
You didn't see that coming. No one saw that coming. And I think that's what... But that was just the voice of protest because people aren't being listened to. You know, if you have got... Actually, you are worried about immigration. You're actually told, no, actually, you can't talk about that because that's not PC. You're racist now. No, I'm not racist. I'm just worried.
Mm.
And I think people should have that voice. And I think by people being told, no, you can't debate that. These aren't topics we can't debate. This is what happens. So we need to have freedom of speech, really.
There was a slightly strange situation before I came on. I was in a cafe today, and there are a group of people who are from probably South Asia somewhere, in kind of heritage ways. They were all talking in their own language to each other. Mm-hmm. A guy came in and just kind of was sat next to them, and then after a couple of minutes turned around and said, "Oh, where are you from?" And they were like, "Well, we're here. We're from here." And he was quite shocked and was really wanting to go, no, but where are you from?
Yes,
and like, it's an odd situation we're in where... there is that kind of nervousness about talking about where people are from, their heritage, and immigration as a whole thing, and a big taboo subject, really, still.
Yeah, I mean, shouldn't we have taboo subjects, should we? That's been a secret, and that leads people to be an isolationist and not really, they're not having that wide sort of spectrum of different ideas coming forward. It's good to learn all the time, don't you?
Yeah.
And share.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the show today. It's great to have you, and lots to talk about. And good luck in the election and with all your new role as on the executive.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you very much for coming in.
No, thank you. I'll come back anytime. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you. www.vexisradio.com